So we're up to the chapter in Jiva Dharma, Vaidhi Bhakti is eternal. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Laha Hari. Okay, before that, just to put everybody in context, because there's always at least one new person that listens somehow to the class. But I think even the people that have been hearing it for a while, they also like the context, but we can do it very quickly. Jiva Dharma is the story of people coming to Krishna consciousness the generation after Lord Chaitanya. And they're coming to a kunj. Kunj is a forest power where there are great Paramahamsa sages living there, specifically Prem Das Babaji. And it's kind of almost like that in Krishna consciousness. If you provide the facility for people to be enlightened, it doesn't even mean you're enlightened, but you provide the right facility to train people, then Krishna sends those people. So even if someone is in the forest bow and that's his intention, then Krishna can make that arrangement. So anyway, it's the story of people coming. And according to who they are, they need a different tattva or subject of Krishna consciousness to promote their faith. If they're materialists, they have to hear the subject of you're not the body. If you're impersonalist, you know you're not the body. You don't need to hear that subject. You need to hear the subject of personalism. If you're a caste Brahmin, you need to hear the subject of Vaishnav Tattva, the subject of what is a spiritual person. So it's a brilliant, brilliant book as you follow the various people coming to Krishna consciousness and opening their hearts to the process by having their doubts cleared. And that's also relevant for us and why this book is so relevant to us, because it systematically covers all the tattvas or subjects of Krishna consciousness. And then even if one is a devotee, and he wants to advance further in his internal meditation, then he has to hear Rag Tattva. He has to hear the subject of spontaneous devotional service. And then within that, he has to hear so many tattvas. He has to hear Ras Tattva. So it's a wonderful book, and we're at the point of the book where an aristocratic Brahmin zamindar, means a landowner, has somehow been enlightened by one of Prem Das Babaji's disciples who had recently come, who was a Mayavadi sannyasi, and by hearing the, you know, Bhagavan Tattva, the subject of God, and the subject of Nitya Dharma or eternal Dharma, he becomes very fixed and enlightened, and he becomes the guru of this Lahari. So the family of Lahari, he's old and retired. They become very concerned. Mostly they become concerned for their reputation, because selfishness can be extended to the family, where your goal is to endorse yourself, to increase your power, to increase your enjoyment. This is material consciousness. So it's very easy to extend the self to the family, or extend the self to the community, or humanity. Kill the animals. So they're very embarrassed by this, and it's ruining their prestige. And they send one of their sons to get their father, Devidas. And their son, Devidas, is a smart Brahmin, and he's a logician, and he teaches. He's a very learned person. So he comes, and he meets his father, and first he just, come home. Right? Just come home and practice. Just like when I got kidnapped. You don't know this era, but I got kidnapped by the deprogrammers. And then I escaped, and then somehow the police came, and my parents had to commit me to a mental hospital if they wanted to keep me from the Hare Krishna movement. So somehow I was in a police car, and there was a big, heavy-set Irish cop sitting on one side of me, and he kept on saying, "Why don't you go home to your parents?" He was a good cop, right? Why don't you go home to your parents? Why don't you just execute? Or Ridayananda Goswami, his mother, I remember this, his mother said, "I don't mind you taking the spiritual path, but why don't you just come home and be a rabbi?" Okay? So I remember he wrote something to his mother that was kind of very relevant. He said, "Our eternal relationship is with Krishna or God, and all others are temporary. Not that we neglect other relationships, but everything is secondary to prema bhakti. It's not that we neglect other things, because other things are important. It's important to be satisfied in life. We see that more and more. You just can't have a philosophy of transcendence, but you can't neglect the vehicle through which transcendence is going to be executed, including the enjoyment and desires that are required at a certain basic level. So Devidas says, "Well, why don't you go home to your parents?" And he said the association there, first of all, he's older. So when you're older, you have more of an adhikari to be detached. One, the senses are weak. The signs of the temporality of the encasement in the body are coming with the arthritis, etc. And it was the culture of India that at a certain time, one had the adhikari or right to prepare for the transition of one body to another. By renouncing family life. Not so much recommended in this age, but still, that was part of the culture. So, Lahari Mahasai, he responds, "Where you want me to go back is not a very conducive place to Krishna consciousness, because the people are antagonistic. They're not just neutral." They said, "Well," and then he said, "Well, just stay home. Why don't you just stay home?" And then he said, "No." He said, "I have very special sangha or association here. And bhakti moves forward by sadhu sangha." So his son, Devidasi, he's still trying to convince him. And he starts to say, what the Brahmin's duty, and he mentions the Brahmin's duty, which includes worship of the deity and prayers and so many things that are all, that's what someone in bhakti does. So he says, why don't you just do this, and this is really the Brahmin's duty. So then Lahari explains that, these things are done, but they're not actually bhakti, because their intention is different. The intention is either liberation from this world or material enjoyment. And in the path of bhakti, when you perform activities, the intention is to get prema or love of God. So then, this Devi Dasi, Devi Das, not Dasi, his son, he continues the argument, and he says, but I see in the scriptures these attainments of liberation and higher material things are extolled. They're presented in it. They actually promote these things. And then Lahari explains to him that there are actually two types of people in this world. There are people who are spiritually awake, and there are people who are spiritually asleep. And the people who are spiritually asleep, they still have a certain self-centeredness to them, either to enjoy the world materially or spiritually. To enjoy the world materially means materially enjoyment, and spiritually means we become one with everything. We are the controller. We are the enjoyer. We are the greatest. We are Brahman. He said, but spiritually awake people, they're really cognizant of the soul as being consciousness, part of this greater consciousness who reaches its fruition in love. And people who have that consciousness, they're not performing spiritual activities for any personal motive. They're doing it only to please God, because they're connected with the rasa or flow of love that's the ultimate reality. So he says that. So, but then, because he's a logician, Devi Das, then he argues. He said, but Raghunandana, he, wrote this book, and it just presents liberation. And he's such a great soul. He said, yes, there are people that write these books, right, because certain people require this to move forward. But he himself was not like this. He was spiritually awake. But he had the duty of presenting this for others. And in fact, there are different, and people who take to different aspects of the shastras, even when there are secondary results, the primary result, Lahari, is to get love. So these secondary results, it's fine, because what happens is people that are not fully spiritually awake, by entering into the world of shastra, into the world of sacrifice, into the world of association with saintly people, they gradually also become spiritually awake. And in fact, there are three types of shastras: tamasika, rajasika, and sattvika, according to different people's adhikari. So he explains this, and Devi Das has never heard anything like this before. So he's kind of like stunned that all of a sudden his father has, he said, I've studied many shastras, but I've realized something by your explanation. He's telling his father, Devi Das is the son, Lahari is the father that joins Krishna consciousness. I learned something very wonderful. And it's not just scholarly, it's depth of realization and understanding that's present. Scholarly means you can quote a lot of verses, you can chant them properly, and you know so many things. But realization means that you've applied knowledge, you've applied superior knowledge, and you have realized and seen it. And therefore, even a very, very simple person can impress a big scholar. And I'll give you an example of a simple person with profound knowledge. In North America, there's an ISKCON farm called Gidanagari. And in this farm, there's an old black man named Bali. And if you see the smile on his face, you know that he has a pure heart. Some of you listening to this Sangha may have heard about him, but I have an audience now here in Vrindavan. So relish me telling about Bali today. He's from the Deep South. He's in Washington, D.C., and he's driving a taxi. And he listens to the radio, and he hears the teachings of His Holiness Bhaktivedanta Swami, who's a African-American, Black American Swami, and it's got a great soul. So he hears this, and he becomes a devotee, and he becomes his driver. So he picks him up one day, and Bhaktivedanta Swami looks at the windshield and sees there's like a rock thrown, you know, where there's like a point in it, kind of concentric. He said, "What happened?" So Bali said, and I can't imitate his accent, but he said, "Well," he said, "in the morning, someone came to my car and pointed a gun and said, 'Your money or your life.'" I told him, if Krishna wants to save you, no one can kill you. And if Krishna wants to kill you, no one can protect you. And the guy went, bah, 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 bah. So he had a simple wisdom. And I remember, and he came to India, and I took him on parikram. And when I took him on Frickham, I took him to Govardhan Hill. And when I took him to Govardhan Hill, see, it was raining. And there was this older African-American lady, Indrani. She's in her 80s. She's on my Sangha. She listens on Sunday. But she's crippled. So I took a bus around. And when we got to Govindakund, it was raining hard. So I remember I was lecturing in the bus to them, and I said to them, you know, in Govardhan Hill, you feel the presence of Giriraj or Govardhan everywhere. I said, Bali, I said, just like when you're in Gidanagari, when you're in the barn, right, don't you feel the presence of Radha Damodar? And he says, I feel the presence of Radha Damodar here. You know, so it's just like, whoa. It's like, you know, it's so simple, but it's so deep. That's his Lord. He's not separated for a second. Then one time he went in Mayapur, and they took him on Prikram, and they were showing all the villages, right, and the land that they were going to buy here, they needed to buy here. And then he just said, well, why don't you make them all devotees? And everybody went, wow, you know, great. And I'll just show you, I'm such a big brain. So I come to Gidanagari, and every year he'd come, he said, Maharaj, I want to show you how to talk to cows, right? So we get by the fence, and he goes, and all the cows come to see him, you know? And he's doing it for several years, right? And then one day he looks at me and said, Maharaj, you want to see the trick? and he opens his hand, and there's some sugar for the cows. So he had them trained. And I felt like, wow, you know, this guy's just, So, if you ever go to Gidinagri, he's still there, you know? He's still there. It's amazing. Anyway, without losing my point, but, you know, Devi Das is a logician. His father knows something, and he may not be of that caliber, but now that he has practice and realization and the right guides, he very quickly gets a depth of understanding. Because the depth of understanding is not just intellectual, it's coming from the heart. We were reading this in Bhakti Log, right? It, you know, you don't have to over-endeavor intellectually in Krishna consciousness, because if you practice deeply, there will be realizations coming from the soul. And Vasudevi, Bhagavati, Bhakti Yoga, Piyojita, Janayasu, Vairagyam, Dhanam Chaita Hoitakam. Then automatically knowledge and detachment comes from bhakti. And what that means is that when you practice the platform of the soul, then all this gyan comes with just a little hearing. You don't have to do deep, deep philosophical analysis. You hear from Bhagavad Gita. Dehenosmin yatade he komadan yoganam jara yatade hantaraptaptya dira tatsanamuyate. As the embodied soul passes from childhood to boyhood to youth to old age, similarly at the time of death, one accepts another body. You know, you hear these verses and then you practice. Then you actually, very easily, you understand gyan. So, Devi Das, he said, I studied many shastras, but by your grace, I realized something deep. And then his father says, it is written in the Srimad Bhagavatam, an intelligent person will take the essence of all the shastras, whether they are great or small, just as a bumblebee gathers honey from many different types of flowers. So if you have the essence, if you have the theme, and you realize it, you have the context to understand everything else. Yasya deve parabhaktir tata deve tata guru. One who has implicit faith in the spiritual master and the supreme lord, all the imports of the Vedas are realized. And what does that mean? That means faith means humility. When you have faith, you have humility to accept the truth higher than yourself. And by doing that, you're acting on the platform above false ego. And therefore, you can see the essence of the shastras, which is to transcend the false ego. So you're on the platform of which the shastras is talking about, and therefore you see it. So, he quotes and he said, my dear son, I used to call you an atheist, now I don't criticize anyone because faith depends on adhikari. There is no question of criticism in this regard. Everyone is working according to their own adhikari, and they will advance gradually when the time is appropriate. There's no longer, of course, if you're sitting on this seat, you have to defend your siddhanta or conclusions from opposing views. But the general view is you see people have different adhikaris, they have different qualifications. And if they're sincere, Devi Dasi is in the shastras. He's following the shastras. So he will somehow advance. And you'll see that. He has a different adhikari. it's considered that bhakti is the highest adhikari. Aho patak swaprachato gariyan yajiva grave bhartite namadivya. Oh, how wonderful it is. If one jiva grave, if on your tongue you have one holy name, chanted with sincerity, you have read all the shastras, you bathe in all the holy rivers, you think, because it's the culmination. And it makes so much sense. What else could be the culmination than come to the platform of love? You were a scholar of the shastras dealing with logic and fruit of action, and since your statements are in accordance with your adhikari, there is no fault in them. Adhikari means qualification. Devidasa, until now I believed that there were no scholars in the Vaishnav Sampradaya. I thought that the Vaishnavas were merely fanatics who concerned themselves solely with one part of the Shastra. But what you have explained today has completely dispelled my misconception. Now I have faith that some of the Vaishnavas have truly understood the essence of the Shastra. Are you studying the Shastras from any great soul this day, do you think? So when you hear, not scholarship, but you hear realization, then it impresses one. Because it's a vision of something that can make you understand something. And then naturally you become concerned with the lineage by which one got that realization. Lahari, my son, you may now call me a fanatical Vaishnava, whatever you like. My Gurudev performs bhajan in the kutir next to mine. He's instructed me in the essential conclusions of all the shastras, and I have just expressed the same thing to you. If you would like to receive instructions at his lotus feet, you may inquire from him in a devotional mood. Come, I will introduce you to him. Lahari Mahasai took Devi Das Vidyaratna, that means the jewel of learning, it's a title you give, to the kutir of Sri Vaishnav Das Babaji Maharaj and introduced him to his Gurudev. He then left Devi Das Babaji Maharaj and returned to his kutir at Chennaina. So that's the essence of the instructions. So he's done it, you know, he's dealt with it, but when he's not dealing with anything else that God puts on his plate, one chants the holy name. And that's the process of advancing in Krishna consciousness, really. You may chant little or you may chant a lot. But when you're not engaged practically, you go back to the prime duty. Because Taram Nadye, Sarva Shreshte, Nama Sankirtan, Nira Aparade Poya Paya Premadat. There are 9 processes of devotional service. And of all of them, chanting the holy name is best. If you can chant without offense, you can get prema. Prema pumartha mahan. The greatest art or thing is to get real love of God. So he goes and he introduces him to his Gurudev. And it's very relevant. Because his Gurudev used to be known as Sannyas Thakur, and his Gurudev used to be a very elevated Mayavadi sannyasi who was meditating in Varanasi when some Vaishnav came back by where he was sitting, walking by, doing Harinam, chanting Nittai Gauranga. Nitai Gauranga, Nitai Gauranga, Nitai Gauranga, Nitai Gauranga, Gora Hari, Nitai Gauranga, Gora Hari, Gora, Gora, Gora Hari, Gora, Gora, Gora. And it affected him. Somehow or other in his spiritual sojourn, you see, there's Jnana Mishra Bhakti. Jnana Mishra Bhakti means you're not practicing bhakti, you're practicing detachment. But for the purpose of focusing your mind on Krishna fully. It's not, you know, we practice Shuddha Bhakti, pure bhakti. We just hear from the lips of great souls. But some people do. There's people that practice all kinds of austerities, etc. But they just want to make their mind so steady that one day they can just fix it on Krishna. But evidently this person, Sannyas Thakur, who was practicing in this way, he didn't have that conception, but somehow or other in his individual spiritual sojourn, he had some samskaras for bhakti that were latent. And when he heard this, it awoke him, and he began to search it out. And then he met this Premdas Babaji, who enlightened him. And then he's now instructing others. So Vaishnav Das, now Sannyas Thakur is now Vaishnav Das. He said, my dear son, what is the extent of your education? Devi Das, I've studied up to Muktipad and Siddhanta Krishmanjali and the Nyaya Shastras and all the books of the Smriti Shastras. Vaishnav Das, then you have labored diligently and you're studying the Shastra. Please give me an example of what you have learned. Devi Das, Anyanta Dukkha Nivritir Eva Mukti. The cessation of all material miseries is known as Mukti. One should always endeavor to obtain Mukti, which is defined in this statement from Shankya Darshana 1.1 at 6.5. I am seeking that liberation through faithful adherence to my prescribed duties known as Swadharma. I'm seeking that Mukti. Of course, a Vaishnava doesn't seek liberation because it's a personal desire. Narayana Prasarde Nakutas Chanya Dibyati Swaga Prabhaga Narakeshu Apitulyakta Darshana. When one is Narayana Parayana, when he loves God, he doesn't care. Narayana Nakutas Swaga, the heavenly planets, Pavarga, the earth planet, Narakeshu. He doesn't care how. It's not about him. It's about service to God. So Vaishnava is not seeking liberation. It's a byproduct of prema. And the Vaishnava definition of liberation is a little bit different. Muktir hitva yata rupam sarupena vivasvite. In the second canto of the Bhagavad Gita. Muktir hitva yata, you give up what is external, sarupena vivastita, and you accept your sarup, yata rup. The external form is given up and you accept your sarup, your own eternal identity and relationship to Krishna. So, he said, I used to aspire for Mukti. I also read these books, like yourself. I studied these books. I also used to aspire for Mukti. Devi Das, have you now given up the pursuit of Mukti? Vaishnav Das, my dear son, tell me, what is the meaning of Mukti? So Devi Das, he says, according to the Nyaya Shastras, the Jiva and Brahman are eternally distinct from each other. So it is not clear from the point of view of Nyaya how the sensation of miseries can take place. According to the Vedanta, however, Mukti refers to the attainment of non-differentiated Brahman. In other words, the Jiva's attainment of the state of oneness with Brahman. This is clear from one point of view. Anyway, the Nyaya Shastras are theistic, so he can't understand it. You know, he's saying, I can't understand that. If they're distinct, then, you know, how the cessation of misery is taking place. But I've studied Vedanta, and it takes place by oneness. So Vaishnav says, my dear son, I have studied Shankara's Vedanta commentary for 15 years, and I also remained a sannyasi for several years. I endeavored strenuously to attain mukti. I spent a long time deeply meditating upon what Shankara considered to be the four principal statements of the Shruti Mahavakya. Finally, I understood that the religious system that Shankara advocated was newly fashioned, so I gave it up. And in the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, what Prabhupada explained is that Shankara was an incarnation of Lord Shiva. And what happened is that Buddhism had, you see, what happened is basically the Vedic culture had become perverted by Brahmins. And there's a provision for animal sacrifice for people who are in the mode of ignorance. So there's a provision. But the provision is the animal is sacrificed, and by the sacrifice it gets a higher destination. And it's done by the priests. And at the same time, the person who has to eat meat, then there's mantras given to him that kind of subtly indicate to him that this is his karmic, that he'll suffer karmically from it, something like that. But what happened is Brahmins were abusing that to open slaughterhouses in India. So they were violating the first principle of spiritual life, which is ahimsa. So God appeared as Buddha, and Buddha rejected the Vedas because people were misusing them. It's described that his philosophy was a timely necessity, not an absolute fact. So, and he was very powerful in that because they were promoting higher moral principles. Even though they were atheistic, they were promoting higher moral principles than the present Vedic culture, which was ruled by Brahmins who became corrupted. So it's described that Shankara then came, and he wanted to reestablish the Vedic culture in India because it gives, when done properly, it gives the facility for people, regardless of their adhikari, to advance. So then it's described that then Shankara came, and he preached a covered type of Buddhism to these people, but in a way that it connected it back to the Vedas. So he's saying that kind of intense and great development